Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. We are actually recording this a little bit early. I am traveling for my mother's birthday on Friday, so I appreciate Alex hopping on a day before. I did one of the interviews before I did this segment with the excellent Sean McIntosh. I wanted to talk a little bit about the controversy surrounding Acerbi after that Milan game, which I thought was quite interesting. So you'll hear that perspective. And later today, I'm recording with a first-time guest I've been wanting to have on the pod for quite some time, Jacopo Piotto, who is an analyst at Sky Italia. I always try to bring in new guests from Italy here and there. So I'm very excited to record with him later today. Of course, with Serie A coming this weekend, we have 1,000 names on deck with his game picks, which I asked him to make after that crazy Bologna Inter match. We'll have, of course, a part of the show just for our patrons, and we're going to wrap up the show with a couple movie recommendations and an excellent TV show that premiered this week. But before we get to all that, I am joined by our dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. Alex, I want to ask you about Paulo Dybala, because I saw this tweet yesterday that made me think quite a bit. So I saw a Juve fan who said that if Dybala were to sign with Inter, it would really ruin a lot of his legacy at Juve, and he would look back at Dybala's time at Juve very differently if he went to Inter. And it was pointed out that, yeah, in the past, there have been coaches and managers go Juve and Inter, sometimes back and forth, like in the case of Lippi and Trapattoni. But since Calciopoli, the big scandal in 2006, that is a little bit different. So I want to ask you this, Alex. You are someone who knows a lot of players well. Do you feel like Dybala owes anything to Juve fans if he signs with Inter? And keep in mind that it was Juve who decided not to extend his contract.
David, I don't. At least on the surface of answering this question and definitely hearing you pose the question, I don't. First of all, you include the very important detail that it's Juve who's deciding to part ways. And first of all, listen, I can't tell a Juve fan how to feel, by the way. Like, maybe if this was Chelsea and it was a similar player to Dybala talent-wise, but also tenure-wise at, you know, the club I support, maybe I'd feel differently. But what's the biggest thing to hold against Paulo Dybala? That he was injured a decent amount? All right. That can be said for so many players, though. So then if he moved on to another top team like Inter, who wanted him and he did well, how much does that really tarnish how Juve fans think about him? You know, does he owe things to Juve fans? I don't think so. I mean, he was part of a number of titles. I understand they never ended up winning the big one, the Champions League. But aside from injuries, I always feel like he was a reason they could win the Champions League, not wouldn't win the Champions League. And also, David, there is something to be said for the fact that they've had this prized asset in Dybala for a while now, right? Got him from Palermo, and then he was so good for a while that we were hearing Messi shouts. And I'm not saying that the Messi shouts are like real shouts, but you know what I mean? Just like, wow, this guy's destined to be maybe a B version of Messi, which is still an elite, elite player. And when you have so many managerial changes, I mean, so many lately, especially, and you know Dybala already is a player that kind of needs the perfect setup, does the club also need to be held accountable for maybe not always putting one of their best players, one of their best assets in the best situation to succeed? Probably, right? So I feel like the club owes Dybala just as much as Dybala owes the club. That's how I kind of see it from the outside looking in. Of course, he had great players around him, but some players are specific system fits, and clubs should know that. You know, a quick parallel, not to go on a Lukaku tangent, but, you know, Chelsea fans are just wondering, like, how did we get it wrong with Lukaku? Who's to blame? And it really turns out it's just like everyone. It's the club. It's, you know, the scouts. It's Tuchel. It's Lukaku. But from a club perspective, since they are the driving ones who paid Inter all that money, right? Or who are supposed to pay Inter all that money. They're the ones who are also supposed to kind of see how Tuchel plays and then figure out if Lukaku fits that. before they invest a certain amount of money. Tuchel, you know, just kind of wanted a top striker. He didn't really want to be that, you know, bossy in his first summer. So they didn't do that. The club didn't do that. They didn't find the right player for the system. So you could argue that, yeah, does Dybala need to bend sometimes to maybe how Juve wants to play? All right, fine. Every top player needs to. But I don't feel like they necessarily took care of their best asset the way that they should have. Once again, the injuries, that's a freak thing. If you want to blame Dybala, fine, go for it. I would just blame bad luck, right? Happens with everyone. Obviously, he is a player that gets injured more than some other players, but I just don't feel like Dybala really owes Juve much, especially now. And this is where I said I'm not a Juve fan, so I'm not going to tell Juve fans how to feel. But especially now, David, having a little wherewithal about football. I mean, you just said, I know it doesn't happen often, but like there have still been plenty of cases where Juve to Inter, maybe even back to Juve, vice versa. And, you know, Milan and Inter players playing for both clubs. Like, it's just happening so much these days that I also feel like in 2022, it wouldn't be offensive if Dybala joined just any other top Serie A team. So, you know, I think he had a successful time at Juve, but of course, if you kind of think of what it could have been, that's where the negativity and the cynicism probably creeps in, right? Because at the beginning, you know, especially when Dybala and Pogba were together, you, and when I say you, I just kind of mean in general, like people, myself included, were thinking, wait a minute, is this going to be a duo that's just going to like maybe even take Juve to a even higher height? And, you know, of course, I'm talking about at a period where they had Pirlo and Vidal and Marchisio, and of course the BBC, like still in their prime, and you looked at Pogba and Dybala and what they were doing, and you kind of forecasted them for, you know, maybe even bigger things. So from that aspect, maybe it's all disappointing, and maybe you feel like Dybala does owe Juve something, but I don't know. From where I sit, I don't really see it as that. I probably see it as an even split, David. I don't know if that's fair.
Yeah, I think one thing that really stood out to me that you said that I couldn't agree more is, you know, it's not for us to tell Juve fans how they feel about the situation. I say it all the time. Passion of fans is, you know, is why we do this podcast, why people are so invested in storyline. So I totally agree there. But strictly from Dybala's perspective, let's look at it this way. There are reports that his preference is to stay in Italy. You know, say Inter, who had Marotta, who used to oversee his work before, if they're willing to make him the best offer, or at least match the best offer, and he also wants to stay in Italy, I really don't see how you can hold it against him per se for wanting to do that. But I totally get what you're saying, the Juve perspective. I also wouldn't fault him if one of his motivations was like, I want to stick it to Juve. I want to show him that I still have it. And if going there gives him that little extra edge, I can understand. But I also totally get the perspective of Juve fans and how I think it's fair to say that they would look at it differently. Like, say, especially if Dybala goes to Inter and flourishes, if Dybala kind of becomes Pirlo 2.0, like after Pirlo left Milan and Milan fought Pirlo, where his best days were behind him. Obviously, if that happens, it's very possible that, you know, Juve fans maybe start looking at Dybala the way Milan fans look at Pirlo. And I do think there are a lot of parallels between the two. Like, Milan did make an offer to Pirlo, but it was a one-year deal. Juve offered him 3 years. So you couldn't have faulted Pirlo for taking that. Juve didn't even make, though, even that offer to Dybala, at least the last time they met. So definitely a very fascinating situation. Let's switch gears to Serie A, the Scudetto race. Really, really interesting. We've been talking a lot about what happened once Inter would have this game in hand against Bologna. It finally did happen. Inter took an early lead with Perisic, and I think a lot of people thought that Bologna was just going to lay down, but no. Bologna not only ties the game, they win outright. Also, big blunder by backup keeper Radu. So it's a fascinating development in the race. So, Alex, I want to ask you, based on yesterday's result, how different do you look at the Scudetto race overall?
Well, You know, the one thing I would say is I know it's just such a small lead here for AC Milan, but, you know, your status quo quote, and I know that normally is a quote that means like from a much broader perspective, like until the status quo changes, I'm just going to go with the status quo. But that's more of a quote that you usually use, like, hey, when Juve were winning all the Scudettos, you were probably just going to believe that they'd keep winning them until they proved that they wouldn't, or another team could overtake them, or, you know, until a team that has this long tradition of doing something, until they change that, you're not going to believe something else. But I'll also just kind of specify that quote. Milan have been in first for a while, haven't they, David? At least it feels like they have been. So even though it's been a small margin for a while, maybe they're really showing us that they can get these results under pressure. You know, the one thing I would be extra confused about in terms of trying to project my Scudetto winner is if this top three was changing constantly, but it hasn't really been. I know Milan haven't been killing it. Like, I know there's been some draws recently. I know it was Coppa Italia, but I know they obviously got spanked by Inter, who they're competing with in the league. But yeah, that's a big win over Lazio, and you know, they had a really comfortable win against Genoa. These could be results where they absolutely slip up. So, you know, I have kind of enjoyed the resolve of Milan. Like, you know, they lost in the Coppa Italia, but they actually haven't lost a game in Serie A since January 17th. So, you know, that's the type of resolve that you need to kind of get out over the line by the end of the season. Now, they can't just draw the last four, but, you know, big one at home against Fiorentina. And, you know, you got to think, and I hate doing this because this is football, right? Like, you shouldn't ever predict wins and losses because you just get the ones that you think are shoo-ins wrong, vice versa. But like, they should, if they can get a away win against Lazio, they should be able to get it against Hellas Verona. You know, the Atalanta game will be really exciting, but you know, I think they can hold through. So if I've learned anything, I kind of think that, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Milan are maybe the more stable of the clubs as well. You know, I know it's just one result there for Inter, but God, that's such a chance to prove that, you know, you can be in the driver's seat and you can win the Scudetto, and then just losing to Bologna, you know, I don't know. I'm more convinced by kind of the championship pedigree that Milan have shown here for a while. Bend but don't break, if you know what I mean, David.
Yeah, I like that bend but don't break analogy. Like, look, this is a crazy race because I'll tell you this. I was watching Lazio-Milan, and I was at Ducali with my friends at the Milan fan club in Boston. And I was thinking, and look, that was the day after Inter crushed Roma. And I think a lot of people were like, huh, maybe Roma and Mourinho are the last real people standing in the way of Inter winning the title. So they beat them. Then the next day, Lazio take an early lead against Milan. Then Pioli makes these subs that were roundly criticized, takes out Ibra, comes in, takes out Giroud, Leao comes out, and you're like, what's going on? And then Milan not only comes back to draw, but they have that huge blunder on Lazio's defense to take the lead. So going into, like, before those subs came on, I was like, okay, Inter here are really going to make a statement. Then they have this Bologna game. And you look at how much that changed on that blunder. And then you had, you know, a backup keeper where all season people were like, you know, Handanovic is a liability. We should be giving Radu more run for his money. Well, maybe now we saw why Radu wasn't playing that much. And, you know, it's very interesting because we played the result, right? We've heard a lot that the reason Donnarumma struggled is because the keeper always needs to be the starter. And okay, you take Handanovic out, this is what happens. You saw Napoli last weekend with Ospina resting and Mire coming in. Now, granted, Radu is a little bit more of an extreme case because Handanovic really, really played a ton. So it's amazing how much things change. So look, it's a 2-point lead. You look at the schedules on paper, the schedule favor Inter. They are playing teams that really have, especially the next two up, they are playing teams that really, Udinese and Empoli, have absolutely nothing to play for. Then, and they do have the Coppa Italia game against Juve, so they do have an extra game. Then they play Cagliari, who are a thick in the relegation race, and Sampdoria, who also could be. So the last two matches are against teams that could really matter. But I honestly, at this point, really don't think that it's really much about the opponent. It's about the team in contention itself. And I'll say that I think it's really kind of fantastic that Milan's last two games of the season are against Atalanta and Sassuolo. And the reason I say this is I've been saying for years that, you know, Milan's been in this banter bad era. I see a lot of Milan fans constantly chirping at Atalanta and Sassuolo. And I'm like, this is not the Milan I grew up with. Milan fans, they were so above this. So I find it really poetic and fantastic if Milan were to win the Scudetto, getting over the hump the last two matches against these two teams that, you know, have become rivals for Milan and really shouldn't be rivals because the differences in the two clubs is fantastic. So I find that fascinating. The last thing I want to say about the Scudetto race was an excellent point that a Napoli outsider made. We were chatting about the game yesterday and he compared if Milan wins the Scudetto, this is going to be like the year that Zaccheroni won it. Milan that season by no means was far from the best team in Serie A. There were some other loaded squads, but they were the team that wanted it the most. And it really does feel like Milan wanted the most. On our Tuesday patron pod, I said that no matter what happens the rest of the season, Pioli's clearly the manager of the year. And I think it's even more obvious now. So it's going to be fascinating. I'm very excited to cover this the rest of the way on the season on the pod.
All right, David. So now let's really look towards football. I mean, I'm really excited to, I might place a wager actually on who's going to win the Scudetto. I think I'll go in Milan as long as the odds are still somewhat okay for Inter. I'm way too into gambling these days. Anyway, I shouldn't be saying that publicly. David, let's move on. Well, speaking of gambling, I know you said this years ago when you made this segment with Thousand Names. Bet responsibly and don't blame David and or Thousand Names for what you choose. But David, let's turn our attention to game picks for this upcoming weekend of Serie A. Who are you guys picking?
Yeah, and I appreciate I asked Thousand Names to send me these after Bologna Inter to see if that changed what he picked. And I think Thousand Names probably went in the direction a lot of people expected. So as usual, we're going to pick three games. First one, Derby della Lanterna, the one in Genoa, actually pretty important for the relegation race. Samp is the host this time. Thousand has 2-2. Brace by Destro, goal by Thorsby and Cinci, and he says Giampaolo is going to avoid relegation with Biscotto, which of course is when teams agree for a draw, but he says his Sampdoria is disastrous regardless. He says Manolo Portanova is a really bad game and that Rovella is indecent, so he's taking swipes at two young players that have been getting a lot of hype. In Italian, Samp Genoa 2-2, Destro, Thorsby, Cinci, Giampaolo si salva col Biscotto, ma la sua Samp è disastrosa, Manolo Portanova scarsissimo, Rovella indecente. So the relegation race, which 10 days ago looked like it was over, we knew who was going down, has really been turned upside down. Salernitana doing such a great, Davide Nicola doing such amazing work at Salernitana has really changed the relegation race. So Sampdoria could be going down. Genoa still in the thick of it. I'm going to agree with Thousand draw. Genoa are the masters of the 0-0. So I'm going to go 0-0. This match. Next up, we have the games for the Scudetto contenders. First up, Milan hosting Fiorentina. Fiorentina have not been playing particularly well 1,000 has it 2-2. Goals by Tomori, Theo, Cabral, Torreira. He says Pioli is gonna buckle under pressure. He says Italiano is gonna leave the game with his head held up very high, and he says this is a draw that makes Moratti and Marotta, Moratti the former Inter president, Marotta their executive, very happy. And he says those are the only people that are gonna be happy with this result. In Italian, Milan Fiorentina. 2-2, Tomori, Fio, Cabral, Torreira, Pioli se la fa sotto, Italiano testa altissima, pareggio che fa godere solo Moratti e Marotta. I'm gonna say this. Fiorentina been a little bit in a free fall. There's been a lot of buzz on Vlahovic, and I saw this really interesting statistic that was treated by Simone Goglia, and he says that with Vlahovic at Fiorentina, they scored two or more goals 11 times in 23 matches this season. Since he left, they've only done it twice in 13 games. So they do struggle to score goals. 1,000 Names has two goals for them. I'm going to give them just one, but I'm going to give Milan two. I'm going to ride Giroud. I've said that if Giroud gets 12 or more goals, Milan are going to win the Scudetto. So I'm going to give him one there, and I'll give the other to Theo. Hasn't scored in a little while, so I'll go with him, and I'll give Cabral the goal to Fiorentina. Next up, Inter traveling to Friuli to play against Udinese. Side note, I saw one of the hosts, someone who likes to troll or who likes to like get people angry for engagement. It's like the exact opposite. So I digress. Back to the game. 1,000 has Inter winning 1-0, goal by Dzeko. He says Lautaro's going to miss a penalty. He says Simone Inzaghi is going to thank the VAR once again. And he says he's going to be back at the top of the standings despite the fear of not doing so. And he says De Vrij, Brozovic, and Perisic are going to be owned by Cioffi, who's the manager at Udinese, and that at the end of the season, Zenga is going to return. In Italian, Udinese Inter 0-1, Dzeko, Lautaro sbaglia rigore, Limone ringrazia ancora con il VAR, agguanta la vetta nonostante la paura, De Vrij, Brozovic e Perisic in baglia di Cioffi, a fine stagione torna Zenga. I'm going to go Inter window. Udinese do score a lot of goals, but they also concede a ton. I'm going to go one goal for Beto, not the Texas governor candidate, but Udinese striker. I'm going to give Lautaro and Dzeko a goal each so we can keep the Scudetto race going. So as always, thank you, 1,000 Names. Thank you for sending in the picks a day early. You are right, Alex. Bet responsibly. In general, be extra careful with his picks. So now we have a next guest, our friend Sean McIntosh. I wanted to have him on to talk briefly about Lazio, but more about the Acerbi situation.
Very excited to welcome our next guest, been a great friend of the show over the years, Sean McIntosh, who you hear often talk about Lazio on a ton of different platforms. He also is based in the U.S. and is the chief fan officer for Charlotte FC. They're doing great. We were catching up before we started recording. And if you want to hear Sean talk about Lazio, definitely check him out on Lazio World. So, Sean, it's always a real pleasure to chat with you. Bentornato tu, Calcio Land.
Always a pleasure to chat a little Lazio and Calcio with you, David. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I know this isn't exactly the best time after what happened, but I'm very curious to get your thoughts on Acerbi's situation, and we'll get to that in a second. But let's talk a little bit about Lazio first. I've been asking this to people as we wrap up the season. If you had to use one word to describe Lazio's season so far, what would it be and why?
Boy, there are so many words we could use to describe this Lazio season, but sticking to one, I'll go with turbulent, very much like an airplane that for us is being led by a drunk pilot in Loquito. It's been a little bit turbulent. There have been moments where we're flying through the air and things seem to be a little smooth. It never stays smooth for long, and the bumps end up scaring you a little bit. And along this journey, we are simply trying to land this plane as safely as possible to the end of this season, which is what it feels like for most of us as fans. There's been its bright moments. There have been the moments where we feel as if we are starting to figure it out, you know, in terms of Saudi ball, and find ourselves in a position, you know, where we're still in contention for European play, where we're not far behind Roma. We've certainly missed some really great opportunities to land that fifth spot. Champions League is now out of the question, but turbulent is about the best way I can describe this year.
I love it. I think that is a very good word for it. So listen, I know a lot of Inter fans were disappointed with the result on Sunday. I have to say I was watching it with a bunch of Milan fans. And look, Lazio got that early goal, but then I can't say that was a great performance. So were you surprised by that display against Milan? Did you expect something better from the team?
Well, I'm never surprised with anything Lazio does. I think we are one of, if not the most difficult team to predict, because I wouldn't have been surprised had we come out and won the match 3-0. Wouldn't have been surprised if we were shell-shocked 5-0, and anything in between. And so, you know, I told an Inter friend of mine, you know, that he had asked us to take care of business for him, you know, and was like, hey, you scratch our back, I'll scratch yours. And I jokingly sent a gif of somebody stabbing someone in the back. And I was like, this is how we scratch backs. And unfortunately, it's exactly what we did. No favors to our Interisti friends. But look, I think it was massively, massively disappointing for a number of reasons. One, we talk about missed opportunities for a team fighting to be in European play next season. You have an opportunity where Juve drops points in a draw. You have Roma losing to Inter. And a big match with a lot to prove against a club like Milan. And we start off really, really well on the front foot. Milinkovic-Savic, who needed a big match, in particular against a Milan team, where he's had his probably his biggest struggles have come against Milan and Kessié and the way that they defend him. And comes out with a brilliant ball to a Chido who scores off of a bounce, finding his space between two defenders. Absolutely brilliant goal to start off 1-0 4 minutes in. And I'm thinking, great, this is what we need. This is the confidence that this group of guys needs to move forward in this match, only to be disappointed in the way we approach the match really immediately after that goal. Dropping back and allowing so much time for Milan to be on the ball, to pressure. I thought we were extraordinarily lucky to get out of that first half up 1-0. And I'm thinking to myself, surely Sadi make some adjustments in terms of how they come out in that second half, only to again fall back in a defensive mindset, really failing to string together any passes. You know, obviously they get caught. Go give up a goal and it's tied. And I'm thinking to myself, here we go. And of course, the way that match ends, 92nd minute, it's a heartbreaker regardless. But what had to happen for that goal to get conceded was a string of comedic errors between Matušić, between a failed header by a Chadby that wasn't able to get the ball out and cleared. And to even I point at Strakosha's involvement in that goal with, you know, potentially some miscommunication or not being direct and communicating enough to attack that ball in air so that Acerbi could potentially get out of the way, to even, you know, Tonali with a bit of a push off. And so many things had to happen. And of course, all you can do was laugh, which I know we'll get to, but honestly, all you could do as a Laziale was laugh in that moment because it was shocking, disturbing, and pretty up to par with what we've seen, you know, in clutch moments from this team this season.
What a perfect segue. Very good job by you. That was a great assist. So, yeah, let's talk a little bit about Acerbi. So to give people some background, Even before this game, Acerbi's had a difficult season, I would say performance-wise, but especially with Lazio fans. He's been criticized in the past before. And it's interesting the way you describe the game is, you know, after that goal, he was seen on camera with a nervous laugh, which I totally agree with you. That's almost the only reaction you could have in that time. But we live in really crazy times where outrage is really a currency. And I think way, way, way too much was made on that. To give a little more background, Acerbi is a former Milan youth team project. So in typical controversial Italian football fashion, there were some implications that he did it on purpose and he was trying to help his team. So he got really, really criticized a lot. Got criticized not just by Lazio fans, but also fans of other teams who don't want to see Milan winning the Scudetto. We're recording this Wednesday. He had what I thought was a very good, heartfelt letter in Corriere dello Sport. So I want to ask you, I know you actually have a little bit of a tie to him too as well. So tell me a little bit what you make of all this situation.
Well, it's important to understand, and I think you pointed it out, right, with just the outrage culture that we live in. But I think in this particular incident, it's important to understand some of the backstory as to why something like this was received in such negative fashion by Laziali and the Curva, because there's a little bit of history there with Acerbi, and a lot of it stems from an incident here really ignited. You know, there had been some small issues, whether it was talking about contract negotiations in public in the media, you know, which is never looked at kindly, to really being a complete flame out between the Curva and Acerbi in December of this year, when, you know, amidst some criticisms. When, again, you mentioned it, Acerbi hasn't had the greatest of seasons. So amidst some criticisms, he scores a goal against Genoa in December and shushes his own Curva, which obviously is never going to be received well. And the Curva shortly after issued a statement condemning Acerbi's actions and asking that he no longer be a part of the club, and that he would be jeered and whistled, you know, every moment henceforth that he steps foot. Acerbi issued an apology that wasn't really well received, continued to be booed match after match. And so there had been some friction there between club and player. This obviously is exacerbated by conceding and being a big part of why we gave up that goal, only to obviously lift himself up and be caught with a smile on his face. I saw that smile live, you know, as the broadcast quickly moved away, and I immediately thought to myself, this is going to be problematic. Yeah. I know he's going to get absolutely gutted for, you know, this smile. And it just, it's crazy. Again, there is context as to why they would be so angry. But, you know, we talk about these players and oftentimes we forget that they are humans that have human emotions and reactions. I know many people, myself included, will often smirk or smile in moments that they are potentially uncomfortable or when there's friction. And so I will never pretend to know why somebody reacts and what their intent is for a reaction in an absolute moment of frustration. I know plenty of folks that when Italy gave up their goal to Northern Macedonia, all you could do was laugh because, again, it stops you from crying in those moments.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it was the reaction for this particular moment was a little bit harsh. I think, you know, when they cut to Matušić absolutely berating the player as well, and in Acerbi, my instant reaction was negative towards Matušić, who was a big part in conceding that goal. I thought, you know, if anybody should have been quiet and not said anything to Acerbi, it would have been Matušić. But there's a lot there. So I think when we talk about this match in particular being so frustrating, there's a lot that goes into it besides the result. Obviously, it's showing a frustration amongst players. Then you've got fans and players. The Kurva actually boycotted this match with increased pricing in the Kurva by Lotito. And so really, again, all of this kind of coming to a head and boiling over with that smile. And so I don't look, I know Acerbi, we have a connection. When my son was born, he reached out. He gifted my son his kit that he autographed. He's been in touch ever since. I think he is a player that has given everything on the pitch. I think he's a player that cares about the fans. I mean, he is a player that suffered cancer multiple times, played over 150 consecutive, or 149, I believe, was the number, consecutive matches post-cancer, really coming close to breaking Zanetti's Serie A record for consecutive appearances. So I think in terms of what he's done and his commitment, it's hard to question that. And so I know he came out with a public statement. But I will say, all that being said, it's really, really going to be difficult to ever mend that relationship that I believe is just fractured beyond repair. And so if I was a betting man, I would bet that Acerbi's time with Lazio is over after this season. You can kind of get those hints in the way he speaks about finishing out this year, you know, in the most cordial way possible. There have been rumors to his desires of joining Simone Inzaghi at Inter. You know, whether or not that happens, I don't know. But I would believe that in the best interest of both the player and at this point the club, there should probably be a mutual parting of ways that happens in this upcoming transfer window.
Very well said, Sean. You know, kind of goes back to the word you used to describe this season, turbulent. I would just add a couple of things. I'm totally with you. I think it's fair game to criticize Acerbi's performances this season. He hasn't been up to his standards. I think overall he's been a great Lazio player. He's really had no help on that defense and has been really quite good. So I totally see what you're saying. And I think the fact that he has to have his integrity questioned is really, really a shame. So I totally agree with you. And the last thing I would add, I forget who said this quote, and he said, "Nothing lies more than a photograph." And I think there's a lot to that because, you know, you often see screenshots on a controversial penalty and all. It's all about when you decide the angle and all. So I always think a lot of people think like a picture is the end be all. And I'm like, it's really not. So I really appreciate you giving this excellent context. I was going to ask you about the Lazio's defense, which needs a lot of work. And that's even without getting in the part of replacing Acerbi. So instead of that, I want to ask you this. You've been doing a fantastic work over at Charlotte FC. Tell me, if you had to pick one thing, what do you think it makes you the proudest of what you've done for the fan experience? What can people expect when they come to the stadium? What's something that you're like really proud that you've been able to accomplish so far?
You know, this is something that our supporters have worked on, and no credit to myself at all. This is the work that they've put in. What I'm proud of is that, you know, for a club that is a handful of matches into their existence, you know, in our curva, you know, we've got a sold out section of over 3,500 fans just in that section alone that you would feel like has been around for 100 years, you know, and that has started to really create traditions and cultures. They had an incredible moment in our last game where we did this synchronized moment with our DJ and our supporters, where they did the Poznan, very popular in Poland, where they turn their backs, start jumping up and down and chanting in coordination with this song. That was absolutely a chilling moment to be in that section, to see that. Again, you see these really incredible moments with fans from some of the biggest clubs around the world that have been around for 100+ years. And to see some of that now with our group of fans so early into our first year, it really, really makes me proud for how our fans have come together to be a part of building this thing with us.
Fantastic. Well, Sean, you know what? We go way back. You've been on this show for a long time, dating back to when you used to work over with Houston. So it's fantastic to see things working out as well as they are. I'm not the least bit surprised because I know you as a person and what you bring to the table. So thanks so much for doing this, my friend. It's been a pleasure chatting Lazio with you during the season. And I look forward to doing it in the future.
Thanks, David. As always, thanks for having me on.
Okay, always great to hear from Sean. Very exciting what's going on down in Charlotte and MLS. I'm looking forward to going to a game this summer. But before we get to Jacopo Piotto, we're going to do a special part of the pod for our patrons. If you enjoy hearing us on Friday, consider becoming a patron. We have an episode on Tuesday. It's usually me solo breaking down what happened in the Serie A weekend, answering questions. Sometimes we have a guest there. We also have a tier with some excellent articles by myself and Enrico Passarella, sometimes some other writers as well. And through the patron program, we support an excellent charity, the Insuperabili, which runs superb football camps for kids with disabilities in Italy. So I'm very excited to introduce the next guest. This has been a Scudetto races for the ages, and we're recording this the day after Inter lost to Bologna, so there are more wrinkles. So I told you guys that this year I was going to challenge myself to bring on some new guests, bring some fresh perspective, things that maybe you hadn't heard in English on various podcasts. So the next guest I've had on my list for a while. I've been circling around inviting him for the pod, and I figured this was the perfect time. So I've been following Jacopo Piotto on Twitter for a while. He works at a Sky Sport in Italy, does a fantastic job as a sports analyst video producer. He's a huge calcio expert, but does follow a lot of different sports. I always really enjoy his perspective on Twitter on calcio. Also, his critiques of the Italian food we have here in the U.S. when I post it, which is always a plus. So, Jacopo, it's a real pleasure to finally welcome you to Calcio Land. Benvenuto to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure. And that was a very flattering introduction. Thank you.
You absolutely deserve it, my friend. So let's start with what happened yesterday. Inter lose to Bologna. You know, we were waiting for this game to happen because there was this game in hand. Inter had beat Roma pretty decisively. Milan come back against Lazio, as they seem to do pretty often. So let me ask you this. Based on what happened yesterday between Inter and Bologna, how much has your perception on the Scudetto race changed?
Well, what I think is I never thought it was already won by Inter before yesterday. And I don't think it's already won by Milan now. I don't like when people say it's theirs to lose with 5-7 games to go, because like it's not easy to win 5 games in a row on top of the ones you want to get there. So even if a club has their fate in their hands, you know, it's still too long of a race to say. Of course, if you think about what it means psychologically, Inter know they have failed a good chance to get back on top. It's the game they had been waiting for months now to get back with the same number of games played as Milan. So that could affect them in the future. And let's also not forget that Milan will be rested on Sunday while Inter will have played in the midweek. And if you win the midweek game, you don't feel tired, but if you lose it, then you might.
What a great answer. I really like that. So let's talk a little bit about the managers. Now, I'll tell you, I think without a doubt in my mind, Pioli is the manager of the year. But when I do say it, I do get some pushback saying, well, you know, maybe Inzaghi deserves more credit. Inter loses Conte, who is the best manager in the league. They lose Lukaku, who maybe was last season the most impactful player. They lose Hakimi. Inter for a while looked maybe even slightly better than the year before. And they got out of the group stage in the Champions League, which I do think is important. But then we have, on the other hand, Pioli, who had a team that finished barely in the top four, loses one of the best keepers in the world. Calhanoglu goes next door to Inter, and Milan are in first place now. So in your opinion, which of the two managers has done a better job, and is it pretty close for you?
I think it's close, and I will start by saying that Inzaghi is doing a great job because he was coming from a very different club. He had been at Lazio for a while, so everything that he had in there, it was more or less his doing. He had to start over in a bigger club, arguably, and it was not a given that he would be able to succeed at that level. And I think he has succeeded, even if he doesn't win the title, because he prepared Inter to also compete in following years. He did well in the Champions League. Now, if I have to choose between the two, I think we have to remember that, yes, Inter lost a couple of great players in the summer, but they replaced each of them with two players. Like Correa came in with Dzeko to replace Lukaku, and you had both Dumfries and Darmian for Hakimi, and then you had Gosens coming in in January, and then Hakan moved from Milan to Inter. So it feels like Milan couldn't really replace the players that they lost, except for Maignan, of course, great signing. But, you know, Pioli had to work with bigger challenges, in my opinion. And when you look at the table, you know Inter are not going to be able to score the same points that they did in the previous season. Milan are on course to beat their own score. And just in terms of achievements, Milan had to go to the last game of the season last year to clinch Champions League football. And in this season, they are already in the Champions League with four games to spare. So I have to pick Pioli between the two, but I think both are doing great.
Yeah, no, I think it's very interesting. I think what you said that sticks out to me is the huge difference in culture between Lazio and Milan expectations. And you're right, Inzaghi was at Lazio for a long time. That was really his team. So well said. So let's look at players that are going to be key in this stretch run. So let's look at it this way. If you were a Milan fan, which two players on Inter would you want to take away? And if you were a Milan fan, which two players on Inter would you like to take away to increase your chances to win the Scudetto?
Okay, I think I have similar answers for both teams because both Inter and Milan have one midfielder that was already really good throughout the season, but then they stepped up in the last games and started scoring big goals like Brozovic and Tonali. Of course, Brozovic is in a different point of his career and he's already well established. Tonali is in his breakout season, I would say, really improving compared to the previous one. But they're doing similar things right now. They both stepped up their game in the last part of the season and they both scored very important goals. So I would take them off first. And then I would choose forwards that had a slower moment before the recent games, but then both Leão and Lautaro came back in a good form. And since both teams were struggling to score without them, I think if you take them off, both teams, it's going to be difficult for them again.
Yeah, I think that is very well said. So let's look a little bit more on the rest of the league. Since you're a first-time guest, I'm very curious to get your take. So I want to ask you this. When teams look back to this season, who do you think is going to have more regrets? Napoli? Because I think in a lot of ways, this is the opposite season of when Sarri got the 91 points, because mm-hmm. every time they won, Juve kept answering. So it was a little demoralizing. On the other hand, this season, I feel like Napoli was given so many chances to be in the Scudetto race. And I think when you look at quality of the squad, I think they're as good. And in my opinion, they have more quality than Milan. And then on the flip side, we have Atalanta, who, you know, have been in the Champions League recent seasons. Last summer, I do think they kind of spent more. I mean, they went Musso. They tried to make some moves to kind of maybe not go all in, but make the next step. But then for me, Atalanta, it's not only that they're not going to make the Champions League and maybe had a chance at stealing a Scudetto. It's also the Europa League. I feel like it's kind of a shame Atalanta, as of now, is not going to have a trophy to show for this phase. So when we look back to this season, in your opinion, who will have more regrets between Napoli and Atalanta?
I agree with what you said about Atalanta not having a trophy to show for all the good they did in the last years, but I think that even though they're probably not going to qualify even for the Champions League, I think that when you think of where they were, say 5-7 years ago, now their status is to be in the top 8 and every now and then compete for the league. For the title, I mean. So I think that you can take into account having a worse season if your worst season is, you know, 8th place or better, because actually they're still in contention for a Europa League spot or a Conference League spot. So yeah, going out of Europa League was a bit of a bummer for them. But when I look at the roster, at the chances they had, I think Napoli have more regrets because, in my opinion, their roster is better than Milan. Yeah. And with the title being assigned in this season at the lower score, I would say, I think this could have been their year. It's they should have taken the chance of both Milan and Inter and Juve failing in their seasons to get, you know, that amount of point that sets them apart from the rest. So it could have been anybody's title, let's say. And they failed the chance in a season in which they had a great roster, a good manager, I think. There seems to be something always lacking at Napoli. And you don't know if it's in the management, if it's the coach, if it's the mentality of the club. It's difficult to tell. But you can tell they are not ready to fight this type of fight, regardless of the quality they have.
Yeah, and you know, to me, what sticks out about Napoli is when the season started, many of us said, well, you know, the Africa Cup, they're going to lose these really important players. That turned out to be a complete non-factor in the Scudetto race. So it's like if that wasn't a factor, and as you pointed out, all the other teams with less points, Milan probably finished with more. It was as good a chance as they had.
Yeah, and so none of the reasons you would expect them for them not to win became true. It was not the African Cup. It was not the fact that Insigne was only his last season, so he could be less motivated. It was the complete opposite. So it was not the fact that one of the other clubs would get to 95 points because that's not going to happen. So where did Napoli lose the chance? It's difficult to tell.
Yeah, no, for sure. So I'm with you. And I also do appreciate you giving us a, you know, more long view perspective on Atalanta, where they were not long ago. So let's talk about Juve. And I have two questions for you on them. Do you think it's reasonable to assume, based on how this season's breaking Juve's financial resources, that they are going to be the favorites going into the next season for the Scudetto?
I think it depends on too many things to be able to tell now because, well, first of all, is the manager staying? Is Allegri going to stay? Because from that answer depends a lot of how the team is going to be built for the next season And I think the roster needs to be built a bit differently from what it is right now, either with Allegri staying or with a change on the bench. You think to build with a different strategy. So what's the project for Juventus? And if we're basing the assumption that they're the favorites on what they are doing now, meaning catching up with the teams that went away in the first half of the season, then I think you also have to consider what happens when Vlahovic gets a cold, you know, because he's been very important for them, but maybe too important. And the team play around him didn't really improve in time as he managed to somehow get them closer to the first three places.
So let me ask you this about Allegri. Let's go on the assumption you have Juve's best interest at heart. I don't know if you do or not, but let's go on the assumption that
My mother is a Juve fan, so maybe I want them to do well.
Okay. So let's put it this way. Do you think she'd be better off as a Juve fan if hypothetically Italiano replaced Allegri? Now, I'll tell you, I think as long as Andrea Agnelli is the president at Juve, I think Allegri is there for the foreseeable future. But let's say hypothetically, like purely hypothetical, if Italiano were to be Juve's manager next season, do you think they would be better off?
It breaks my heart a little bit to say, but I think Allegri has embarked on a quest to kind of demonstrate he can win titles while going against everything that modern football is proposing right now. And I think that I think he can, and he proved it, because you wouldn't consider him a progressive coach in the sense that Guardiola is, for example, but he's won titles. So, you know, he can. But if that's the spirit, meaning I want to prove them that I don't need to update my football, I don't need to read books, as he says, and then I can still win, I don't think that's the right spirit to do it. So unless he changes his mind a little bit about this and tries to adapt a little bit more to what modern football is requiring teams to do at a certain level, or all levels actually right now, I think maybe Juve could be better off with a change. Now, then you also have to think of what happens when Juve change, because they did change with Sarri, but then maybe the club was not ready for the change. And then they changed again to Pirlo, which is a whole different thing. And that was probably kind of a mistake. So it's difficult to predict what would happen if, let's say, Italiano replaced Allegri. But I think in this moment, Italiano is understanding the current way football is played better than Allegri, maybe.
I certainly agree on that aspect. So let's talk about the Roman clubs. Who has impressed you more with what they've done this season between Lazio and Sarri? You pointed out earlier, Inzaghi was there for a long time, so that was a big change for sure, which I guess you also could say with Roma going from Fonseca to Mourinho. So between the two, who impressed you more, Sarri at Lazio or Mourinho at Roma?
I think before the season, there was a lot of hype for Sarri because, you know, he's shown he can make his teams play in many different ways. And it was always an interesting way, always an entertaining way. And he managed to win stuff as well. Mourinho was at a point in his career where he seemed to be no longer in touch with where football was going as well. Same conversation we could have about Allegri, but slightly different maybe. And moving to Roma marked like the first step down for him from a certain type of club and type of money for him. So I think that the feeling was that Mourinho was going downwards in his career and Sarri was more or less staying at the same level. And I think Mourinho has overperformed the expectations, let's say. So they are close to winning a title, which would make him, by the way, the first coach to win all UEFA competitions. And they're close to Lazio in the in the table, but the feeling is that even the Roma fans were expecting to do worse in this season, and they were surprised by how well the team is going. Now, they're not playing the best football in Italy, that's a given, but somehow it feels like Mourinho could be playing a longer game here than he had in previous jobs. So I'm curious to give both two seasons to be able to judge them. I think it's fair to assume both that will stay unless there's
a
call from a club that is higher placed. But I want to see them in two seasons because Sarri might need it to improve and change from what Inzaghi did at Lazio. And on the other side, Mourinho is known for getting everything out of a team, but then failing to keep it up in the future. So the second season would be interesting, I think.
Yeah, no, I think you said it very well. I think especially Mourinho this year before the Inter game in 2022 was really impressive. And I was like, the people that were saying, oh, you got to give this guy some time. I was like, maybe there is something to it. So I want to ask you this question. This is something we've been debating in the podcast since last fall. I feel like Serie A has four great, very exciting young strikers in the league. And, you know, they've had up and down throughout the season. But I do, just talking to you today, I can tell that you'd really go out of your way not to be a prisoner of the moment, which I do admire. So let me ask you this. If you had to rank, who do you think is going to have the best career overall between Osimhen, Tammy Abraham, Vlahovic, and Lautaro Martinez? How would that order look?
I think Lautaro would be my fourth. I would separate him from the other three just because I think that Vlahovic, Abraham, and Osimhen, I think they have the ability to make something happen from nothing when their team needs it. Now, in football that is being played by top clubs, you don't necessarily need this type of player because the structure of the team play makes up for it. And maybe you would prefer to have somebody like Lautaro. But, you know, the other three seem to be able to create things from nothing. And if I have to rank them, then I would put Vlahovic first because he seems to be able to do everything he's trying to. Of course, everything is going his way in this season, the previous one maybe, but the potential seems to be really good. I'm hoping, you know, going back to Allegri versus Italiano or any other coach, I'm hoping that he also gets a structure of a team at Juventus that lets him play without the burden of having to create things from nothing and being able to do his part and his goals as he should normally. And then Abraham and Osimhen, I think they're very close. I think for all of the three that I put on top, you have to think that they are all solving problems. Well, especially the first two, Vlahovic and Abraham, they're both solving problems of a dysfunctional team most of the time, at least in this season. Osimhen is already the type of striker that, you know, works in a team that does things for him. So yeah, I think that the ability of finding something in each game, even when the team is not performing for you or around you, sets Vlahovic and Abraham apart, and then Osimhen and Lautaro.
Fantastic. And I swear to God, guys, I don't bring people in that I know are going to pick Vlahovic first. I don't coach them. I honestly had no idea. I'm still riding for Osimhen, and I have to say Tammy has really, really impressed me this season. But I also find it very interesting that when I bring people on whose opinion on football I really value, it's almost unanimous Vlahovic being ranked this way. So let's close on this. And Jacopo, you really did a fantastic job. I can't thank you enough. Other than Pioli, and I guess we can take Inzaghi off because you also seem to be pretty high on him, and I think for good reason, is there another manager in Serie A this season that has really impressed you?
So I think we need to wait until the end because, you know, four games could make a difference in for many clubs. And especially if Salernitana managed to survive or even get close to it, given the premises. I mean, in January, they went close to being deleted from Italian football. And they had to play with this on their heads. And of course, that affected the results. And then Davide Nicola came on. And I think he's a very underrated coach. He brought my hometown club, Livorno, back in the Serie A. He saved Crotone in 2017 in a very similar situation as he's experiencing now in Salerno. And despite doing well in Genoa, at Torino, he was never confirmed or given a proper chance from the beginning of the season in the top level. So, well, ever since at least. So I think that even if he saves Salernitana and stays there, the feeling is he might deserve a proper start with even a bigger club. And this is to say that I think what he's doing at Salerno and he has done in previous years should be rewarded with maybe not a trophy, you know, manager of the year, but should be recognized. And I wish he stays in the Serie A so he can be a proper contender for manager of the year next season.
What a fantastic answer. And yeah, you're right. It's amazing that Salernitana wasn't that long ago. We didn't even know if they were going to finish the season. It's been a revival for him. Sabatini, really, really exciting. Jacopo, I can't thank you enough. You know, to our listeners, I told you this year I was going to try really hard to change things up. So, you know, we've had the guys from Vox to Box. That was before this year. We brought on Giuseppe Pastore. It was fantastic. Benny Giardina, absolutely great. We brought a Juve fan that other fan bases don't hate, and Riccardo Spada, and Jacopo was the last part of this great poker of guests. So I can't thank you enough, Jacopo. It was a real pleasure. I know you're
thank
at
you
work.
For having
thank
me.
Thank you
for me.
Doing that. And I look forward to chatting culture with you again. Thanks again.
Of course.
Okay, wanted to close the show. We haven't done it the last few times on a few pop culture things. So I did see some good movies that I wanted to share with you. I saw The Northman. This was Eggert's new movie. He was one of the exciting new directors that came out in recent years. He had two movies that I really enjoyed, The Witch and Lighthouse. Those movies were made with little money, but were really, really intense, very well done. So he got a big budget for The Northman, which is this Viking revenge tale. I saw it when it came out. A fantastic movie to watch on IMAX. The positive things, it's not a 3-hour movie. It's just over 2 hours. And I think that that was perfect length for it. Some amazing action scenes, a raid of the village. Absolutely incredible. That was one of the most breathtaking scenes I've seen in a while. Eggert's the director, really flexing in that scene. You watch the village raid. It's like kind of on the protagonist, but all the little things happening in the background. That was really one of the best scenes that I've seen in a while. Then there's a final sword fight on an active volcano. Hard to top that. So good movie. It did surprise me how much a supernatural, trippy stuff there was. Like, I'll confess, I know very little about Viking culture. I understand that was a big part of that. Eggert's thing is kind of to treat the supernatural pretty matter of fact, but there was a lot of it in the movie. He didn't have final cut in the movie, so I wonder how much he had to do with that. I didn't do that well at the box office, which is probably not great news for these types of movies. Again, this is the first time he got a big budget, and he's probably going to make bigger profits on the previous two movies. So if you want a good action movie, you could do a lot worse than that one. I would say a superb performance by Nicole Kidman. The other thing that I really liked about this movie is that it's a revenge tale, but they show revenge from different points of view. They leave it pretty ambiguous. And they also kind of say that revenge sometimes feels really pretty hollow. And I think they played that really well. And the Nicole Kidman character drove that home very well. So I recommend that one. Next movie, I completely 1,000% recommend. It's everything, everywhere, all at once. This is one of those movies that I went to see knowing little to nothing at all about it. I had seen the preview. It was an A24 movie, which I usually like, independent movie. I thought it was a satire on the metaverse, and it is. When I first saw it, I kind of viewed it more as a comedy with some personal things. So many of the themes went completely over my head, but I really enjoyed it the first time I saw it. Then I listened to some pods, did some research, then realized what a profound movie it is and how it's more of a the metaverse, the multiverse, because of how we are different people. We are different people to based on the people in our lives and who we are in contact with. And it's about the relationship of the mother with her daughter, which a little bit went over my head. But that movie was fantastic. Some really, really amazing performance. Michelle Yeoh is the lead character, is great. Jamie Lee Curtis is superb. And the main actor, the husband, was the kid that played Data in Goonies and was in one of the Indiana Jones. He's really fantastic. He really, I felt like I could relate to him a lot. I can't recommend this movie enough. Absolutely watch it. I do kind of recommend watching it without knowing too much, but then I recommend reading up about it after. So that one, really one of the best movies that I've seen in the last few months. And the last thing I want to close on is the first episode of We Own This City, which is the new miniseries done by David Simon. He's the creator of The Wire. This is in a lot of ways. I wouldn't say it's season 6 of The Wire. That would be unfair. But you know how sometimes when someone releases a book on hardcover and then later on they release the paperback and they add something at the end, like the way the book was received and they reflect on how things changed? I think this show is really a reflection on how things changed in the Baltimore Police Department since the event of The Wire took place. If you watch The Wire, it's a very grim. And I think this show says that maybe The Wire was too optimistic and that things actually got a lot worse. Really, really well done. The main writers is George Pelicanos. He's the one that used to write the next to last episode of every season of The Wire. And that's when the tragedy always happened in The Wire. It was always the penultimate episode. So he wrote all of them. The opening monologue of that show is incredible. I mean, you talk about great writing. It's superb. I love that it has some actors that used to be drug dealers, now are cops. The guy that plays Marlowe in The Wire kind of is like a Lester Freeman type detective. Poot, who used to be on one of the corners, is like a thoughtful detective as well. Really great. I actually would say that if you have not seen The Wire and you've been thinking of dipping your toe into it, I would say watch the first episode of We Own This City and then decide. If you liked it, then it's probably worth you doing The Wire as well. Now, The Wire is really a slow burn. It takes at least 6 or 7 episodes to get going. They are really setting up the table. They are teaching you the Baltimore dialogue, the slang. They are just kind of setting everything up. I would say until they do the chess scene where they talk about the chess pieces in the drug game, that's when it really takes off. So you have to be patient. But I think if you watch We Own the City, the first episode, and you're like, oh, I like this, I want to see more, then it absolutely is worthwhile for you to watch The Wire. So I'm very excited.
John Bernthal, right? Just to get in there, John Bernthal is the leading actor in We Own the City.
Yeah. It's fantastic. Like it's amazing. It's a great show. Yeah, Alex, definitely check it out. I like, by the way, that they didn't release every episode at the same time. Like, you can just binge it. I think it's 6 episodes. They just released one. And it kind of reminds me of how I used to watch Sopranos and The Wire back in the day. I used to really digest the episode. So definitely check it out. So I want to take this opportunity to thank everyone who supports the show. We really do appreciate it. I know you guys have a lot of options for SETI. If you like what you heard, consider becoming a patron. Leave us a review on iTunes. I read them all. Leave us 5 stars on Spotify. It helps us reach more people. So thank you very much for your support, and talk to you next week.